Hi, I'm Terry Meekin. Welcome to Roving Report. Mark Shorrock wants to put electricity stations in the sea, and he's hoping to get the first one up and running by 2017. But before he gets there, he's got to talk to government, he's got to talk to environmentalists, and he's got to get the money, £750 million, to build the project. So in this roving report, we're off to question Mark Shorrock on how he's going to manage it. I asked him first to tell us the difference between his tidal lagoons and the Severn Barrage.
The Severn Barrage is a wall across a river, blocks the river, changes the hydrology of the river. A tidal lagoon is a man-made, U-shaped breakwater that's just in a bay. It doesn't block a river, doesn't really affect the coastal processes, enables the tidal mudflats to be covered and uncovered with each tide. And we are creating a sea reef because we create in the breakwater a natural hatchery for lobster and oyster and fish. With the tidal lagoon, we very, very much want to be able to supply local electricity from the power station in the sea that people can see outside of their windows.
If we're talking about dollar per dollar per dollar for the cost of building, same amount of electricity output, what's the factors between wind, solar and tidal? Say wind's got a factor of £1, right? Now, how much more does it cost or how much less does it cost for solar for the same amount of electricity and for tidal?
So the difficulty in answering that question is that a solar panel will work really well for 40 years, a wind turbine will work really well for 20 years, and a tidal lagoon will work really well for 120 years. So you've got a different duration. And the solar panels will work for 11% of the time during the year. Wind will work for about 30% and tidal will work for about 50%.
But taking all those factors into account,
then I think tidal is probably the best because it lasts the longest. But if you were taking just a 1 year snapshot, at £1 million for 1 megawatt of solar, you need to pay about £1.5 million for 1 megawatt of wind. And you need it at the moment to pay about £3 million for a megawatt of tidal. But within two power stations' time, two lagoons' time, you'd be paying about £1.5 million.
Right.
So tidal lagoons and wind will be neck and neck, but a tidal lagoon will last four times longer, five times longer.
Oh, you say that, but looking at your scoping document, you put down 50 years for the tidal lagoon in Swansea. You're now saying you're moving that to 150.
The engineers will design the breakwater for an insurable life of 60 years. And then when you sit quietly with them and having a chat, they say, well, it'll be here in 120 years. The La Rance tidal barrage in northern France, turbines have been there for 49 years in the sea working now. Mm. They've just had a sign-off for the next 25 years. So that's a 74-year power plant, very similar to our own in that it's in the sea and it's turbines that can work both ways. Mm. 75 years has to be the minimum length of time you'd now want the breakwater to last for, because you can see a turbine housing with turbines working for 75 years.
How are you going to build this thing?
We're going to build a tidal lagoon. You have to build a breakwater. So the breakwater is a sand core breakwater. And the sand is in giant great big bolsters, 100 metre long bolsters. There'll be a cutter suction dredger which will dig up about a metre to 2 metres of depth of sand by about half a kilometre. And it'll suck that sand and water up and it'll stuff it into great big long pillows, 100 metre long pillows. And that will form the core of a breakwater. And on top of the breakwater for the wave side, the wind side, the sea side, there'll be armour stone. Big pieces of granite, probably Cornish granite or Welsh gabbro. And they'll be 6-8 tons in weight. And so you build a breakwater. First year, we build about 2 to 3 kilometres of breakwater. In the first year that we're building that 3 kilometres of breakwater, we also build what's called a cofferdam in the sea. This is a big sand island in the sea, 1 kilometre around a diameter, which we excavate in the middle. And then that becomes a dry pit in the sea, where we build the turbine housings. The turbine housings are vast. They're 550 metres long, they're 70 metres wide, they have 7 metre holes. And in those 7 metre holes, you place turbines. And those turbines are standard run of river bulb turbines. Three blades. Think of a ship's propeller with three blades and a bulb on the end of it, which is the generator. And the water flows into the tube, into the 16 holes that we have. And it generates electricity by turning the propellers. It's about 2.5 Olympic swimming pools a second running through the turbine houses. And the incredible thing about the Bristol Channel is that we have a tidal range at various parts of the channel between 8 metres and 14 metres up and down every day.
This component, this generating component, is this modelled on the existing hydroelectric industry, or is it something brand new that you've got to build?
No, so it's something that's modelled on the existing hydroelectric industry. So it's like a bulb turbine that's been around for 50 years.
Scaled up?
Not even scaled up. There are 7-metre runner diameter bulb turbines operating around the world at the moment. There's Northern France, La Rance, Sihua in Korea.
Who's building these? Any British companies, or are they German?
So the generators are British. GEC in Rugby builds them.
Oh, they're still doing them good.
In South Wales, there's stop logs and gates and controllers that are made. We've got quite good capability still to cast and weld. So we'll be looking for a lot of high quality welders to be able to weld the propeller blades together. Mm-hmm. And the intention of the project is that we'll assemble and ideally procure as much as we can locally of the turbines. In terms of completing the picture of what we're building, we've built the breakwater out to a turbine house in the cofferdam.
That's taken about 2 years.
The first breakwater wing has taken a year. The turbine house itself is taking 2.5 years to build. Mm-hmm. And concurrent with building the turbine house, you're then building the easterly run of the breakwater.
And how high is the breakwater from sea base to above the water?
At its deepest point, it's about 20 metres high. And at its shallowest point, it's only 2 metres high.
So what are the risk elements in this project? They seem to be mostly environmental rather than technical.
The things that you have to measure for environmentally are, will we change the coastal processes? So will there be sand shifting around the bay? Will we harm water quality? Because there's some sewage outfalls in the bay that in storm periods pump out raw sewage, and you have to make sure you don't worsen the water quality. And then the seabed ecology. So those are our big three things that we have to show that we don't damage.
And have you done that yet?
We've done that. We've done very detailed coastal process modelling. You measure wave heights, you model the sediment transfer, so how far the sand moves in the currents, you measure the currents. You then have very clever two-dimensional computer models that then work out
what the flows will be. So who's funding all this? Before you even throw a few bricks in the water, there's a huge amount of money in this area.
To date, we've funded all of this activity ourselves from our company, Tidal Lagoon Power. And we've just now embarked on a community share offer where we're offering shares to people in the community if they'd like to be investors in it, alongside some more professional investors who come from the energy and construction world, who've been quite interested in the known quantity that is the lagoon. And it's a known civil engineering breakwater. It's understood how you build a cofferdam. It's understood how you build a turbine housing. So we found that some of the supply chain have approached us and said, can we invest, please?
So you've got people who actually think they want to get in on the project from the point of view of supplying either labour or materials, quite interested to get into doing it. So what's stopping it? What's the political view of it all?
The political view is quite positive, but a bit of a policy vacuum. So at the moment, there isn't a policy for tidal lagoons in the country.
There's already a policy for many things in the country.
Completely.
Let's face it, you know, I mean, I talk to so many people like yourself, modern-day Brunels, I call them. In the old days, I mean, we just got on with it. You didn't have to have committees. You didn't have to... You can't pin anybody down to actually make a decision.
Your modern-day Brunel is a lovely phrase. We've said that we're going to build this tidal lagoon, so we've cracked on. We've cracked on despite the fact there isn't a policy to propose tidal lagoons at the moment. And we've got so much support for the project in Swansea. And the local politicians, so the Assembly members and the MPs of the South Wales area, South West Wales area where the site is, have started to get really firmly behind it. So there's questions now in the Welsh Assembly from the local AM saying, the people of Swansea support this lagoon. What are we doing in terms of policy to make sure it happens?
So who's against it? Because you know you're never going to get 100% with
you. Amazing thing is, so far, we've had brilliant goodwill. We've done now 240
Friends of the Earth
meetings.
And all these other...
Very positive. Friends people. Of the Earth, RSPB, World Wildlife Fund, very positive.
They jumped up and down in disbelief when the Severn Barrage was going to be proposed, so they're quite happy to think about lagoons, aren't they?
They are, and the support that we hear from them is... They like the fact that tidal lagoons still expose the intertidal, so the mudflats are still there for the wading birds. They like the fact that a tidal lagoon doesn't have to block a river, so we don't block the Towy or the Neath River. We're in between the Towy and the Neath River. So we don't block the river for fish species, we don't cause sediment build-up, and the intertidal area is still exposed.
And you've got to go for broke. Is there no way you can sort of go for a proof of concept by building a smaller working model?
This is the smallest you could build.
Is it?
Yeah, so that a big one would be 70 or 80 square kilometres, like Bridgewater Bay, which would be a wonderful tidal lagoon. Deep waters, 14 metre tidal range. Bridgewater would be a wonderful power station and still benign environmentally. But Swansea, it's a great site. It only impounds, so this makes it a pilot, 11.5 kilometres squared of water.
So the whole project would take how long from start to finish until you start getting like bob switching on from it?
So we'd start on site in 2015 in March, and we would generate power at the end of 2017.
Now, who's going to give you the go-ahead, and what steps have you got to overcome to get to start on 2015?
So we've got to get the go-ahead from the Planning Inspectorate. So the government has set up a Planning Inspectorate based in Bristol, which is the place that determines nationally significant infrastructure projects.
How many people have you got to deal with in this particular, I'll call them a quango, because really I never had to deal with them. Can you pin anybody down or take responsibility?
Do you know what? Answers? Actually, I like the Planning Inspectorate. I do, because it's a very intense process, but they're very clear about what they require from us. They've told us exactly what planning conditions we would have to meet, what drawings they need, what details they need, what process we have to go through, and then when we've fulfilled all of their processes, sometime in the back end of this year, we will table for them a planning application, which is written by ourselves. We write our own development consent, and then they have to adjudicate for 15 months about us.
And so what sort of things are they looking at?
They decide. We don't know until they appoint their commissioners, which they don't do till next January, what they think is important that they should investigate about our application. But they're there to arbitrate. So our job has been to build local support from the local council, from local residents' associations, from local sports groups, from the environmental groups, so that when we table this application, there's a whole set of people.
There's a whole army of people behind you.
We like this.
Are they looking at this in isolation, or are they looking at it competing with other infrastructure projects, or does it stand in its own right?
So it stands in its own right. I'm sure they will have to look at things like cumulative impact with, say, an offshore wind farm or an onshore wind farm or an onshore new building. That'll be part of one of the chapters in the environmental impact assessment, is the seascape amenity, and another is the terrestrial amenity. So they'll have to take that into consideration, but it stands alone as its own application, but under the overarching umbrella of the National Policy Statement. So there's a pro-renewable energy national policy statement. There's something else about harnessing infrastructure that does good for society.
But nuclear drags on forever and a day. They can never get an answer on nuclear. Are you saying that it's going to drag on, or are they committed to give you an answer by the end of a certain time?
So the interesting thing with Hinkley Point with nuclear is they went into the same planning process that we did, and they got their planning consent in 10 months flat. So the thing that's dragging on with nuclear is, are the government going to underwrite it?
Yeah.
And that's problematic for us too, because when the government's focused on trying to do a deal with EDF, we believe a programme of tidal lagoons is a distinct possibility, and we'd like the government to be treating us like they treat EDF, i.e. dealing with us, appointing people to investigate our economics, and so that we've got the opportunity just to lay out all the costs so they can understand them fully.
It's just too much going on at the same time, you think, for anybody to actually focus on one particular area.
So I think what you've got the civil servants in the marine area, very supportive of what we're doing, but then you've got this wider Office for Renewable Energy and Office for Energy full stop at the Department of Energy and Climate Change, and one of our challenges is to get the attention of the politicians and the civil servants to understand how positively people are seeing this. I met a chap in Swansea last week. He said, "Mark, it's brilliant what Tidal Lagoon is doing." He said, "Because people don't make investments. We live in this country based on infrastructure that was put in 120 to 150 years ago, and we haven't really put in any decent long-term infrastructure since." He said, "This Tidal Lagoon in Swansea is brilliant because it'll last for 100 years, and we're finally putting in infrastructure again that lasts three or four generations. How are you getting on with government?" And I said, "Well, we get quietly supportive noises, but now the challenge is to get real engagement."
And how do you go about getting that?
We talk to our local MPs and say, "Would you please..."
Well, they're already on board, aren't they?
Yeah, so but they can then say to DEC, they can then say to the Welsh Assembly, "We think this is important, we think you should take this seriously. It's locally popular. We would like you to pay attention to it."
Why is it a consideration for national governments when it's a Welsh project? You've got the Welsh Assembly. Why can't they make their own infrastructure projects up.
And I think the Welsh Government would love that. The difference between Wales and Scotland is Scotland makes up its own planning mind about energy. It's allowed to. It's a devolved power for Scotland. Wales does not have an energy decision devolved to it, apart from under 5 kilowatts, and obviously we're 250 megawatts.
But the problem that you seem to be coming up against is this other competing noise in the background for the other industries, waves, wind, solar, nuclear, and gas, and everything else. It's a question of where the government wants to focus on its energy. I mean, what's the killer blow for you to tell them you must go tidal?
For me, it's a power station or a series of power stations that lasts for my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. It's key. It's something that's going to last for long term. Cost. Lagoons long term are much cheaper than wind. The forward price curve for gas and oil sees them doubling in the next 7 years. So our costs come down as we build second and third lagoon, such that we'll be cheaper, if the forward projections are right, we'll be cheaper than gas and oil-fired power stations by 2020.
But now you've got fracking on the scene now, which has put through another spanner in the works to some extent, because people say that may be the answer to, well, short-term, to the gas price problem.
And it's certainly a case that last year at the party conferences, we know of three renewable energy companies that were there talking about renewable energy to the politicians. We know that there were 40 lobbyists for gas companies and 30 for nuclear companies. The context that politicians are making their decisions on is certainly influenced by the fact there's many, many paid voices from the lobbyists on behalf of fossil fuels and nuclear, and much less voices on behalf of renewables and something like ours, tidal lagoons.
How much money do you have to raise to do this?
So there's two bits. You've got to raise about £12 million, which we've just about done, which is this phase now, for the planning, consent and detailed design phase. And then the project itself will be 650 to 750 million, depending on how many turbines we put into the eventual lagoon.
And that's going to come from what, an IPO or
No, it will probably come from the range of investors that have started talking to us. And this is what's brilliant. Investors have started coming to us saying, we like the look of tidal lagoons, this looks very sensible.
Well, sovereign wealth funds, I thought, would have been interesting. Yeah. See, what you really need as well, I would think, is sovereign wealth funds. You need somebody with some muscle in Parliament.
Potentially.
Who are actually the investors as well. And say, oi, I've got my money in this, so get a move on.
No, that would help. It would really help. Our manufacturing base, so people like Alstom, people like Voigt, have got a voice. Costain, as our marine contractors, strong in Wales, big Cardiff office, they're pushing hard. Atkins, making an investment in a lagoon, which is quite striking for them. First investment they'll make is a UK engineering practice. Again, making sure the government know they think this is serious.
I mean, what you almost seem to need to get together is all these people, the CEOs of all these companies, in one room and focus on not so much building the lagoon, but how the hell you're going to get the permission to do it, and then just have a strategy to actually make sure you bend so many years, you're fed up and say, oh, go away and do it. Technically, it's going to work. It's just like everything else in this country. It's politically difficult to get anything done because there's so much going on and they made so many mistakes and everybody's frightened to make another mistake. It just frustrates the hell out of people like yourself. Have you got to get a guaranteed price per kilowatt for your energy as part of the project?
The government wants to hide the fact they're giving a subsidy to nuclear power. So they've created a whole new energy bill with a contract for difference so that they can offer different bands of payment guaranteed by the government for different types of low carbon or zero carbon technology, including nuclear. So, we have a new energy bill. It's going through Parliament, should be cleared at the end of this year. Electricity market reform. Under electricity market reform, the government wants to protect consumers from higher bills in the future. And so as in the future, gas and oil prices will go up, they therefore give you a price which is including your subsidy and your gas and oil price, if you will. The whole price, the brown power price and the subsidy, is in one new mechanism called a contract for difference. That contract for difference sets the amount of pounds that you will get paid for each unit of electricity you produce.
And they've decided on what that is for each of the different...
They've decided on what it is for offshore wind, for hydro, for solar, for onshore wind, for biomass. They haven't decided on what it is for tidal range, and they said tidal range will be on a case-by-case basis. What we hope it means is that government will recognise that if you want to create a whole industry around tidal lagoons, a benign way of harvesting what is brilliant here in the UK, our high tidal range, they will let us build a smaller one in Swansea Bay, which is the pilot, which needs a higher contract for difference, but that will realise future lagoons that can create low-cost future energy for the country.
Why don't you amortise the demands on the government for the price that you want over the three or four lagoons that you think are going to come out, rather than just hit it all in Swansea? And also, why it's going to last 150 years, or 60 insurable, why are you trying to get it back within 30? Because you did say earlier on that it would be 30 years and throwing the pound notes at Swansea.
Well, I think that, so our view is that the funders don't want to fund anything over longer than the 30-year term. So on the funding side, the reason for a 30-year term in the financial model is because we haven't yet got the pension funds to agree to fund over 50 years, but we're getting there. We've just got them to fund a 24-year term in a solar park, so there's no reason why we couldn't persuade them to do 40 years in the lagoon, and we're going to try. But in terms of Treasury is saying to the government, we want all the contract for differences to only last for 15 years, apart from the nuclear one, which apparently is going to be 35 years. So we're hoping that nuclear in this is our ally. Mm. We're hoping that if nuclear can get a 35-year term contract for difference, why couldn't we as well? Mm. If they were to stretch it out, then yes, you can make the subsidy less, but it lasts for longer. Mm. This autumn, we'll start doing the detailed environmental survey work on two new lagoon locations.
Where will they be?
Well, we're going to look at about four and then work out which two seem to be the most environmentally benign. But obviously Bridgewater Bay is a big prize, and the Colwyn Bay area of North Wales is something that looks to be a brilliant site as well. Any lagoon requires a lease of the seabed from the Crown Estate. So the Crown Estate will later this year, we hope, and other things we need to push over the line, issue a leasing round, a competitive leasing round, where whoever wishes to bid for that piece of seabed for a tidal lagoon can come and bid. And the Crown Estate will put that area of seabed out to tender. The two big things that we need to knock over the line are that the politicians tell the Crown Estate to start investigating a tidal lagoon leasing round, because you can't actually build it without a lease in place. And secondly, that special provision is given to tidal lagoons because people recognise a 120-year power plant that works with nature with no feedstock costs. And sits there benignly generating power is a good idea.
But every time you've got to deal with a different body, you've got to keep repeating the same aspects of
it. It's endless. It's endless.
You know, it's not going to harm the shrimps, you know, and you've got to do this for everyone you go to.
Yeah. We've just published today our planning, our preliminary environmental impact report, all 1,200 pages of it, 16 chapters, and I think we must have consulted with over 200 different bodies to do it. We start.
Who's the slowest people then? The Crown Estates people?
Yes.
I mean, they seem to
Crown Estate and government.
I mean, Crown Estates all belongs to the Queen. You can't have any of this, you know, and they probably come down, you know, with their flunkies and they're looking out and they're probably dragging their heels. I mean, you know, it must be very difficult to deal with some of these people.
Well, I think the Crown Estate works with the grain of government. They're very keen to tell you. So the thing you've got to do is then, no politician wants to stick their neck out too early. Everyday people get the lagoon and think, that's brilliant, let's go. What a wonderful vision. We love the idea of an oyster farm. We love the idea of the lobsters in the bay. We love the idea of a triathlon centre. We like the fact that the bit of Swansea Bay that wasn't joined up because the docks now gets rejoined up. So many positives from the lagoon. I mean, we create 20 kilometres of sea reef because of the fish that will come and inhabit all the breakwater. But then you have to translate that into the politicians' understanding that, one, our numbers make sense, i.e. we know the cost of building it, and two, people want it. So we've just probably, we hope, reached that stage. So the next stage is, can we get the politicians to push the Crown Estate and to push the Department of Energy and Climate Change to say, this is sensible, can we help make this happen, please?
Mm. And how high up in government have you actually gone and got a positive response?
So we've spoken to the Secretary of State for Energy and Climate Change, Edward Davey. He's very supportive of the project and wishes us the best of luck in delivering it.
Is that all he said? Why did he say coming up at the door?
So I think it's difficult for the Secretary of State to say anything more than good luck, because ultimately our planning decision goes to him for a decision for a yes or a no. So that's as high as we've gone. We haven't briefed anybody else at a cabinet level, and the task at the moment is to try and get the briefings with the senior civil servants in the Department of Energy and Climate Change, which is a harder task to achieve. What I want to do is I want to make sure this is UK and Wales supply chain. So I want to make sure that we've created a manufacturing base here, that we're making the geotubes here, that we're assembling and making turbine parts here, that the gates and the cranes and the stop logs are being made here, that UK construction industry is doing it. Really driven by making sure that this isn't a whole import job. There's a chance here. We've got good welding skills in this country. We've got good construction in this country. We reckon on the 750 million of the first lagoon, at least 390 million of that could be spent today in the UK on the UK supply chain that exists already, and we could possibly get another 100 million on top of that.
What characteristics do you reckon a person like you has to have in order to get a visionary project like this achieved?
Well, I think you've just got to be fearless, because if you worried the government were going to say no to you, you'd have to stop. And there's no way we would ever stop, I would ever stop. So you just keep pressing on, and you carry on, head down, until you deliver the project.
Mark Sharrock, thank you very much. You've been listening to Roving Report, produced and presented by Terry Meekin. For this week, we've been talking to Mark Sharrock of Tidal Lagoon Power. Roving Report, radio for the community.